Welcome to the Digitally Sick podcast.
Hi there, and welcome to another edition of Digitally Sick. In the pod today is myself, obviously, Alex Butler from Zandy3, and Faisal, we have yourself as well. How are you doing?
Yeah, how are you doing? All good, thank you.
Fantastic. And today we have a special guest with us as well, Peter Fuellen. Peter, do you want to give yourself a brief introduction?
Yeah, thanks, guys. And thanks to be here. I've, as you know, been a bit of a fan of Digitally Sick and so on over the years, so it's interesting to now be on the pod with you. Thank you very much for the invitation. So my name is Peter Llewellyn. I run a rather strange affair that's grown up around me. If you go to medcomsnetworking.com, you'll find there's lots of resources, services for people who work in and around the global community of medcoms, by which I mean medical communications, medical education, and medical publishing. And there's a whole array of associated services and so on. So I guess it's important to say I don't do medcoms anymore. I used to. But these days I provide services that try and support people who are working in and around medcoms, and people who want to come into medcoms. I've got a resource at firstmedcomsjob.com, for instance, providing insights for people who want a job in medcoms. So lots and lots of activity all around medcoms, and I'm very happy to be here today talking about what's happening in this business.
Great. So basically, we're going to split this conversation up into three sections. So section one is straightforwardly going to be not quite what is medcoms, but really where we're up to, what we've been doing over the last 10, 15 years, any advances that we've made, any kind of principles that we've been using in order to engage healthcare professionals and other audiences. Second section is going to look at what has changed, if anything, based on the recent pandemic, obviously probably quite a lot. What have we learned from that? What's been good? What's been bad? And then finally, kind of a look to the future of MedComms, which is, you know, where is it going in the future? We're going to need to be doing in the next 5 years. So if we kick off then, my kind of idea of medical, because I work within medical communications myself, although not, you know, solely, is essentially it's about engaging multiple stakeholder audiences with the desire to provide high quality information about, you know, the medical aspects of the pharmaceutical industry, from what I've been in anyway, whether that be at congresses, whether it be around data releases, whether it be around other things. So Peter, as someone that obviously is running the MedComms network, how would you describe kind of succinctly what MedComms is?
Yeah, I mean, it is actually quite challenging because you know, MedComms is a bit of an artificial construct. So, I, for instance, at my careers events, I line six MedComms agencies up against the wall and I say, you know, describe MedComms, and it's different. People are doing different things in different sorts of ways. The way I talk about it is it tends to be at the more scientific end of the spectrum. I mean, we've got people handling technical scientific data. Many of them are PhDs and so on. They're understanding the science and they're communicating. They're finding ways to communicate to, as you say, a mixed audience, which can be anything from the other top opinion leaders in the world to, you know, to GPs or nurses, healthcare professionals, whatever, at different states. So one of the tricks within MedComms is always talked about is you're taking complex information and you are presenting it appropriately to your audience, and that can be very different sort of thing. They tend to work, it tends to be done at a global level, and tends to be in the English language, but it's very difficult to get into the nitty gritty because you've got publication planning, you've got conferences, you've got digital work, you've got training and so on. There's a lot of different things going on in there, so we have to be a little bit careful not to pretend that there's some sort of absolute box here, but it is, as I say, I would argue the more scientific global end of the communication spectrum, which is a very wide spectrum of healthcare communications, if that makes sense.
What would you say, and this is going to be very reductive, but I think it might be useful, what would you say the major objectives within medical communications, medical affairs are, and how do you think that we have been meeting those objectives, say, over the last 5 to 10 years?
Well, the basic objective is take that complex data, and it's simply like the trial data, for instance, take that trial data and help the company communicate it, publish it, communicate it appropriately to the right audience. Yeah. Now that can mean all sorts of different things. At its most basic, you know, and particularly these days, there's been huge pressure on industry to publish everything. That's a lot of trial data that needs to be properly written up, submitted to journals or whatever, to to be out there as part of the evidence base. Yeah. And that sort of that sounds simple, but actually is quite complicated. And there's quite a few people involved in that. And opinions will vary on I guess how effectively that is. Publishing is still very much, you know, you publish a peer review paper, it's still like it was a few hundred years ago sort of thing. And it's interesting to speculate how that could change, but there are a number of stakeholders who have to change their views on how that changes. But on top of that, you have then, I guess there's a bit of a pyramid effect. I mean, there's key data that, you know, that's pivotal to what the farm comes to. You need to find ways of engaging with your audience, and those audiences can be quite different, as I say, you know, and it can be the 10 top scientific opinion leaders in the world that you're trying to engage in this discussion, or it could be the GP population or whatever. Finding ways to communicate information effectively is tough. And that's where I think it's gotten more interesting in Medcoms. And I think the digital world allows more interesting things to happen. But it's tough. And as I say, it comes as a whole load of different sort of specialities and tactics and all the rest of it. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, whenever I have people explain what they believe the objectives of medical communications are, that I often hear it described from the perspective of what they want to do or what they need to do. So there's obviously things that need to happen because you need to publish your data. Like you say, in the world of transparency, you should be publishing basically everything in one way or another.
Yeah.
And then from the perspective of what the company would like to communicate. But I very rarely hear people talking about the perspective of what the value is for the person receiving this information.
Receiving. So as in I was going to go a step further. I just jotted down as well. I'd go a step further and I do think it's genuine over the, I've been around in the industry for quite a while, and I would say we've always worried about the patient. There's a lot of people increasing over the more recent times have talked about the value ultimately to, you know, what we're trying to do is improve and benefit the lives of patients and so on. And that's so let's not forget that in the end, that's the result. And there's a lot of focus now in educational activity, Medcoms type activity, to sort of prove that there is real benefit. You're not just getting people to sit in the meeting room, you're not just getting a paper published. There is actual concern about what happens. I think that's hugely challenging, but I think the focus is rightly being put at that end. So again, does that make sense?
It does. I mean, I wasn't even thinking of that in many ways. Obviously the patient's the most important thing. I suppose I was thinking that if you look at large scale surveys of, say, for example, what healthcare professionals want and need to improve their medical practice. You know, they talk about interpretation of clinical data for practical clinical purposes. They talk about peer-to-peer. They talk about tools and services that help them improve provision of care, I suppose. They don't often talk about some of the things that pharma historically has focused upon. So I just wondered if even taking out of it the patient side of things, how you feel the interaction has changed, if it has changed over the years with regard to the value it provides. So, for example, through what we would call education, how do you see that value extend?
Well, I guess I think we do better now than we used to do because we think about it, and that enables you to do better. I think it's hugely challenging, and I think there's too much that is done that doesn't actually deliver at the end of the day. But that's simple for me to say. I think it's more difficult in practice. I mean, I as you probably know, I set up the European CME Forum with Eugene, and I'm now not a part of it. But in CME, there was an awful lot of focus on the sort of the pyramid and the, you know, ultimately the benefit to clinical practice and patients and so on. But measuring it, tracking it, understanding it, delivering it, hugely, hugely complicated and can easily be underestimated in terms of how hard it is, how much funding is required in order to, and so on and so forth. So it worries me that a lot of people maybe pay a bit of lip service to it. But I do think I do sit and think about the challenges involved.
Cool. So if we think about, you know, that desire to engage people, and by engagement, I suppose I would mean everyone has their own slightly different understanding of what they believe that is. But for me, I think it's about either providing information and support that people genuinely need themselves, not just that you want them to need, and ultimately solving problems for people. And if we take that kind of framework and place it upon Medcoms, how do you think it's been doing with regard to innovating, you know, changing the way it's practiced, utilizing multiple channels, for example, providing value beyond that purely educational, as you say, publishing context that has stayed pretty similar.
I think I'm saying that I just think it's challenging. I think everyone could do a lot better. I'm not really answering your question, am I? But I think everyone's trying to go in the right direction. I'm a bit of a fan of digital stuff and so on, and it's frustrated me that Medcoms hasn't embraced digital, and there's so much more you can do to engage people in different ways and measure and all sorts of things. But overall, we're sort of heading in a direction. I just think there's, you know, a lot further we can go.
Have you seen
any, I'm not quite sure how to answer your question.
Has anything come across you? Have you seen things that you thought that was how we should do something? Have you seen, say, for example, I always thought, for example, that pharma is actually great at providing high quality information to people. And at congresses, for example, I always wondered why, I know people have dabbled in it, but why we didn't put together, I really do not want to call it Netflix, but a means of really personalising that conference experience with regard to giving people multiple ways to enjoy the content, interaction, peer-to-peer chat, but also essentially a personalised environment where they can get information that matters to them, not just for their job title or because they're on some kind of target list. I mean, have you seen things within Medcoms that you've been excited by and thinking, yeah, that could possibly lead, that could show us the way with regard to the future?
I have to emphasise, I don't do Medcom, so you know, I am standing off to one side here. I mean, some of what you're talking about there, I've seen conference apps and so on, which claim to be able to do some of what you're talking about. I personally haven't seen one that I've got excited about. Mostly, I just got frustrated, and I don't think. But I can sort of see what they're trying to do, and I think maybe in the end there's opportunity. I mean, for me, the simple stuff appeals to me. I mean, there's clever ways of doing stuff, but at the moment, and at the moment we're jumping ahead slightly, but the COVID thing has forced people to move and find different ways of doing things. I find it intriguing, and it's horribly simple, that I can dial in to something and watch someone giving me a good presentation. I actually think that's quite useful. And the stuff that can go around it, chatting, whatever, chat boxes, whatever, can help that experience. But that I find exciting simply because I wasn't able to go in the first place. A lot of this stuff is closed to me. And suddenly I'm accessing or can access information that in a very simple, perfectly straightforward, useful way. Now, there's arguments about didactic lectures and all this, but actually sometimes I just quite like to sit and listen to someone who knows what they're talking about talking. And I really like conversations and panel sessions and things like that. Now, that isn't quite what you're getting at, but for me, that's what excites me. And I think what people are doing at the moment is finding ways of delivering content in different ways, which may be opening up people's minds to the fact that simple can sometimes be good. Now, if you can tag on things around that, the peer-to-peer that you're talking about and stuff like that, you know, is very good. But sometimes can be very distracting. I mean, I've run webinars where we've got chat boxes and so on, and people start saying the craziest stuff. I mean, they're quite enjoying themselves, but they end up gossiping with each other. You know, so there's pluses and minuses to these things. I think it's all more good than bad, but I think we're in the middle of a huge learning experience, and I'm just quite happy to stick my hand up and go, I don't know how to make this work best.
I mean, I definitely, when I was talking about this, I wasn't meaning about trying to think of complex ways. Simple is always, you know, the best value. I suppose I was thinking that there's been a bit of a rush, hasn't there, to talk about how you can digitize experiences that were not digital before. And I suppose my concern is that that's always the wrong place to start, because in fact, a lot of the things that healthcare professionals have historically said they enjoyed going to Congress for, things like the networking, of course, but also the case studies and the understanding how their peers have worked through a complex differential diagnosis or how they've managed someone through kind of disease pathway or whatever. And actually you can do even amazingly enhanced kind of case study environments, for example, online that you couldn't even do offline. You can get people's opinion really, really quickly and easily, kind of in an online environment. You can have not necessarily peer-to-peer chat, but you can have collaboration environments looking at how you can solve small and big problems within disease areas. So I suppose I was getting at those kind of things.
And again, I'm completely on your side on that one. I think it's easier to talk about it than actually do it in practice. And I've seen I've seen examples of people trying that sort of thing and it's just not coming off. I think there's quite a lot of things you can just not get quite right and it just doesn't work sort of thing. But I'm completely with you. I just think we've got a way to go, and it's not just the technology. In fact, the technology is the least of our problems. Mm-hmm. It's the thinking about it, it's making it happen, and so on. I'm completely behind you in saying you don't just take a real world meeting and turn it into a virtual meeting, although there are elements that just transfer very easily. So why complicate it? There's more stuff that you can do. There's always been more stuff for years that you can do digitally. It's finding the environment to do it in. So, you know, there's stuff that has been done on iPads that people have at exhibition stands. Also, you know, it's all amazing if you can get people engaged with it. And what's happening at the moment is it's opening up more opportunities, but people are very busy. So, you know, how do you get through that noise and actually get them engaging with you? But no, I mean, I can't come back with a specific example, but I've seen demos, I've seen people talking about how this stuff could happen, and I can completely buy into it. It's just whenever I've actually seen stuff being delivered, it sort of doesn't quite hit the mark, and I might just not be seeing the stuff that's really working. And I just think we're in the middle of a learning curve for that. And then this last 10 weeks, whether we can really, you know, and whether people in medcoms are really the right people to do it and all the rest of it. I mean, again, there's discussions around in all sorts of directions. There's a lot of people are looking at and certainly talking about it at the moment as this is opening up all sorts of opportunities. We can, you know, our clients suddenly want to do different things. Great, we can do different things. Now, whether that's real or not, and whether any one of the parties involved can really take advantage or not, I don't know. But there's a lot of talk about it, and there's a lot of people playing with different ideas. And for me, that's exciting, because out of playing with stuff, then innovation, or at least moving forward, comes out of that. And there must be stuff going on there that is fantastic. I just personally haven't seen it.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe then we'll, there's a lot of the things that I was going to ask or go on to. Would maybe fit well into what we've learned over the last couple of months. Basil, did you have anything that you wanted to comment upon?
No, I mean, I'm just thinking, listening to you two. I mean, there's loads of obviously questions and stuff. Where you mentioned to Peter, have you seen anything? Have you seen anything yourself, which is good, which is out there?
To be honest with you, I think that it probably fits better into the talk about, you know, the current environment, because I think there's lots of things that are, how can I put it, that are positive and I think are exciting, but there's also, I'm seeing, it's obviously just my opinion, but I'm seeing sometimes some of the same mistakes being made with regard to where people are coming from strategically with a lot of this stuff. There's a lot of, because it's been a crisis and people have had to work and think quickly, some really good things have happened. That have just happened, you know, because people are out of necessity. But I think there's been some few mistakes are being made that could have consequences. But maybe we can talk about that in the next section. So move on then, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we can.
Yeah, let's just talk about that now. So essentially, as the world has been thrown into crisis over the last 2 to 3 months, and it's meant essentially that a lot of people are working from home, virtually everyone, and that we've had to communicate in different ways. Congresses have been cancelled, meetings have been cancelled, clinical trials are on hold. The whole world has been thrown into crisis, and maybe it's worth talking about that. And to your point, Baz, maybe I'll kick off by saying that, you know, the biggest fear I have is that, first of all, people try and replicate the real world experience without actually thinking how they can add enhanced value. But broader than that, there's certain fundamentals when you've been working in digital communications, let's say. I don't like to call it digital, because we've kind of moved away from saying that. But, you know, for the purposes of this, let's talk about the foundations of how you communicate with people through digital channels. I fear that the Medcom's response from people, agencies maybe, for instance, working within Medcom's, has been to solve technical challenges and to try and replicate real-world experiences. By that, I'll give you a perfect example of that, the virtual booth. It makes absolutely no sense. It's not virtual in the sense of it's not a booth, and it's, you know, essentially a microsite with materials that may or may not work well in an actual booth. And healthcare professionals don't rate booths in their top 10 reasons to attend a conference. Not saying that there aren't good ones, because there are. And essentially not thinking about what the value exchange is in this environment. And to the point that, Faisal, you've spoken about for many years, you know, a very basic fundamental journey of how people discover your content, the experience that they have that's of value to them, the measurable objective at the heart of it, that's something that someone does that has real value to them and also has value to you, and then how you build a longer-term relationship with those people over time. That the framework of communications that I don't believe is placed upon it, and maybe it's because in Medcoms a lot of the stuff has had to be done, publications, Congress, and things like that, where that same level of understanding of the audience and what that matters to them didn't have to be there. So, you know, again, it's not to say that good things haven't happened, because they most definitely have, but I wonder if that those fundamental pillars of really understanding your audience needs, how you can solve problems, and then how you reach and give them those experiences and measure it, I just wonder if that
that's
really strong.
Yeah, I think, and Peter touched upon it earlier, it's like, so Peter's been, I know Peter's been banging on about like the drum for digital for 20 years in the industry, and he's done some good stuff in his previous roles as well. But I mean, it's honestly, because I've been banging on about it for 10 years, 8 to 10 years in this industry as well. And it saddened me when people say, oh, we can't do SEO. And I saw a stat the other day from someone on LinkedIn, which really frustrated me, was about doctors and smartphones. And I'm thinking, oh my God, are we still having that conversation? Because I remember having that conversation in 2008, 2009 about smartphone technology. And no, doctors won't have smartphones. They're quite old. They're going to stick to their Nokias. They're going to stick to their Blackberries. And I mean, it's not a conversation, is it, anymore? And it worries me that we've now been forced to do all this stuff. And as you said, it's just basics. It's understanding the audience needs. But because we've shied away from it for so long, and the last 10 weeks, people are making a lot of mistakes. They're making a lot of mistakes because they didn't understand the basics and didn't embrace digital in the first place. And digital isn't rocket science. It's, as you said, it's like, what is the value exchange? What are the user habits? What does the actual user want from you as well? I mean, that's quite important. I don't know what your thoughts are on, like, the digital, people knocking back digital for so many years, Peter.
Well, I mean, 20 years, if not 30 years. But it's felt like people haven't, in and around my business of medical communications, it feels like a lot of people haven't really embraced what I think are some of those opportunities. I think, and people, you know, agencies who took on a digital expert or something, I would argue, I can't really remember, I can't prove it, but I would say that 20, 30 years ago, we had meetings where we were saying, you know, we shouldn't be having separate digital departments, or, you know, this should just be the way we're working, sort of thing, you know. It seems to me that that's taken an awfully long time to sort of like work its way through, and it still doesn't entirely work like that in many places. I think that's a problem. I still think it's easy to talk about this. It's difficult to do it in the real world. It's been interesting. Things like coming back to my CME experience. I mean, there's some interesting stuff going on in CME, where there's a lot of needs analysis. It's a big part of CME. And to some extent, that filters. And I've seen Medcoms agencies who bring that into MedEd projects, but also their projects generally. They go out and they do needs analysis. But in CME, it's a really big thing. You have to do your needs analysis. You have to show that somebody, there's a gap, that someone's going to do something. And you have to prove this sort of delivery of benefit. And again, all I'd say is it's very difficult often. It's underestimated. And therefore, it's no one person's fault, but people can become quite pragmatic and go, well, actually, it's just too difficult. You know, let's just get on with it and do something. And one of the things with digital is, you know, there are people who go around, you can measure everything. Well, you can't measure everything, you know, or at least you can, and then get completely, you know, misled, sort of thing. So I'm still going to stick with my line, which is, I think that for the first time in a very long time of me talking about digital, a lot of people are trying. And I think trying is where it starts. I just wish they'd tried a lot longer ago. And then we'd be doing maybe more interesting and cleverer things. But I also just like the simple stuff. Again, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but that's me and where I stand on this one.
Well, we always say it as well, and Alex says it as well, is everyone designs these apps for have everything on them and don't make any sense from a user experience. They're not simple. They're literally like, let's chuck the kitchen sink at it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you look at the, so a good example is, and we say this, is if you look at the App Store, like free downloads or downloads, the apps on there haven't actually changed that much for the last 10 years, for 8 years. They've been the usual suspects if you look at the top 10 apps. So if the whole world is used to those type of interfaces, and a lot of them are, they're quite simple interfaces and people get used to doing that, just use their UX, just use what their functionality is and keep it simple.
But also there's a limit to how many apps I can fit on my phone. And, yeah. And you know, even the most, and I'm not, but even the people who like apps and just sort of seem to fill their phone with apps, you know, there's still a limit sort of thing. And there's an awful lot of apps. And to come back to, I think, what you were sort of hinting at earlier, I mean, you know, if all the doctors have got smartphones out there, you know, let's all do an app. You know, there's been this sort of a tsunami of stuff, which whether it's good or bad, you don't even know it's there. You know, yeah. It's just, and so, you know, I don't know what the numbers are. You guys all know about numbers and things better than me, but I remember hearing presentations where people would go, look, you know, 95% of apps, you know, you can get some people downloading and then 95% of the 95% never get used again sort of thing. And I've seen all sorts of people excitably talking about their apps because it must be great, mustn't it, someone, but actually very few get used. So yeah. To sort of come back, I think, to an earlier point, Alex was making, you know, there's no point just getting excited about the technology. You know, does someone actually really need this? But I would, one thing I will say, and it's a bit of a soapbox for me, but I don't know whether this is the right thing or whether I'm jumping on something inappropriate, but, you know, I do find it amazing at the simplest of levels that people don't sort of test what they do and ask the user. You know, I spend a lot of my time checking what I'm doing at the simplest possible level. Right? Yeah. Does it actually work? And the easiest way is to ask somebody else whether they're looking at the same thing as you or using it. And that's not complicated. And I would probably say 9 out of 10 of my projects that have started to go wrong were solved because I just asked somebody or somebody told me. So if you could build that bit into your planning, now that's a less sophisticated way of talking about it than the need analysis and all that. But at the most simple level, if you've got an app that can't be that, you know, or you the classic, as always, you know, you produce something that looks great on the client's computer or the somebody's computer or the designer's computer or whatever it is,
on a PDF.
But it's designed for the general population, half of whom don't see it because they use something else. Classic, which has been with us for 30 years, and people still in and around digital are frighteningly stupid, in my humble opinion, when it comes to that sort of basic level of, you know, you produce something, can they actually see it? Yeah, the classic QR codes. There was a classic time when everyone was getting excited about QR codes. I went to some meetings, QR code. There's no Wi-Fi. We can't access, you know, it's like, hang on a second. You know, there's, we can't do anything. I was sitting in a meeting room in the dungeon of a hotel and everyone was, they were from the floor. It was like, use the QR code, do it now. Let's have a demo. We can't do anything. And it's that sort of, people need to think. And that's not just Medcoms. I mean, I can be rude about Medcoms, you know, as well as anybody.
No, it's everyone,
you know, people generally. And I think, you know, one of the, you know, and it's not as simple as saying these days, lots more people come into the business who are just more familiar with it. So therefore they ought to know what's going on. Because you still have to, you know, turn on the second brain cell and think about this stuff. And that it's digital, but it's also just as much real world or any other, you know, people need to think a little bit more sometimes. And I think everybody could do better. I personally believe that, you know, lots of Medcoms agencies, if they were sitting here, would be going, but, you know, we are and we're heading in the right direction, but we can all do better. Then that's a bit open to, I mean, if you want to sort of start talking about where it's going, that becomes a bit more difficult to know quite, I think, how it's going to change. I think it'll be much more of the same, actually, but hopefully it'll be smarter. Sorry, Alex.
No, I suppose my concern, I mean, obviously listening to all of that, is that trying and failing is fine. It's a cliche of the worst kind, actually. All it's talking about is fast iteration, prototyping and testing and user-centered design, which is totally different to doing something that you're happy for it to fail. And my point from that is that if you look at the way that agencies have often communicated in this time, they've wheeled out their digital person who's spoken about digital challenges. Whereas actually, that's very worrying because actually we're talking here about how we add real differential value. And actually, unfortunately, marketing communications is one of the few areas where it's perfectly acceptable for people to say that they have no qualifications, but they do it anyway. You know, it's like going to the dentist and then saying, look, I'm not qualified, but I'm really going to give it a go. And, you know, if it fails, then we'll do better next time. But like, well, you know, actually, I spoke to you earlier about the fundamentals of digital communications as a process of what you have to do to be discoverable, what a customer experience and user experience is, how you measure that with regard to conversion measures, contributory measures, measurable indicators, how you actually utilize the more traditional marketing frameworks in order to apply them to digital environments, what value exchange is, and actually what a differential value is. If you look at a lot of the Congress and virtual booths, and no one's gone through that with a strategic focus model to say, where are we offering differential value? Why would someone want to come here to be educated on this disease process when they could go to that place that's actually more likely to be of value to that person? But what can we offer that's differentially valuable? And so I think, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't go on. I have no idea of the breadth and of what's going on in Medcom. So it's just my perspective. But just from what I've seen, I think that we need to work with people that really understand how to do this well in order to add real value to it. Because it's so important. You know, communicating our science is the most important thing that we do, supporting the healthcare professionals, supporting patients. That's what it's about. And it's unlikely to be a PDF of a poster that does that. So that's my contention. And obviously, we're all in agreement about that. But it just always, having done this for 20 years, it is sometimes frustrating that people are totally cool about saying, oh, you know, I've no experience in this. Obviously, I've no training in this. You know, it's totally cool for people to be in marketing communications who aren't actually qualified in marketing communications, if that makes sense. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So the future, we touched on it. I mean, this is a bit silly, isn't it? In the sense that, you know, I think we're all in agreement that futurology and futurists, and it's kind of a bit of hokum, because people tend to see what's around them and then predict more of the same. And as we see with COVID-19, you know, not many people predicted that. How do you think it's going to go, Peter, in the future? Because obviously you're not in it, I understand that, but you do run the network, which has a lot of people within their comms as part of it, including myself. So where do you think the future's going?
Well,
get your crystal ball out, people.
And I really don't know. What I'm hearing and talking to people about in and around Medcoms is not so much about doing things dramatically different. I think we're heading in a direction where things are done better, and lots of your points I absolutely agree with, and I think it's being done better, and I think people are becoming more skilled and they're more knowledgeable and they're more expert and they're more all sorts of things, and there will be people brought in and so on and so forth. What I hear much more about at the moment is how the way we work together and deliver whatever the end project is, that's what's changing. And I have to say, from my point of view, that's what interests me at the moment. You know, the fact that everyone's working at home and discovering, by and large, that it still works, and they're discovering tools that they didn't necessarily even know about or ways of using it in order to deliver a whatever. I think that's interesting. And I think that's going to have the biggest impact on our business. And I don't think many people have really stopped and thought about that very much at the moment, because we're still in the sort of, we're dealing with COVID, it's pandemic, we're having to work at home because of COVID. I think probably about now or now-ish, we're starting to get to a stage where people are having conversations along the lines of, how's our business going to be structured in the future? And some of that is a mixture, frankly. There must be people who've got a financial business, whatever you want to call it, head on, who are saying, you know, there's a better way of running a business. But there's lots and lots of people out there who've discovered they don't need to commute 2 hours a day in order to go somewhere to write a manuscript or whatever it is. Now, Medcoms was going quite quickly down that line anyway. Lots of people in Medcoms will say they worked remotely, they could work remotely, they could work flexibly. But the reality is, a lot of companies weren't set up like that. What they were doing was saying to people, here's a laptop, of course you can work at home and put the manuscript together or whatever it is, yeah? That's very different to what's happening at the moment, which is everyone's remote and we're having to find ways of working together as an organization remotely and deliver stuff differently. But it's changing people's lives. And that, I believe, will end up changing the nature of the business. And ultimately, let's not forget, then get out of the bubble, right? Okay, so it's changing our lives and how we communicate, how we deliver, but it's changing the lives of the people that we're trying to communicate with. And to come back to your point, Alex, the healthcare professionals, the experts, the whoever it is, patients, you know, this is opening up different ways to communicate. More to the point, is opening up different ways that they will want to be communicated with in the future. You know, they won't want to travel to wherever it is for 3 days. And I accept the fact that conference is more than just listening to someone speak, but busy people start making more and more decisions about whether it's worth going to meetings or whatever it is, and the travel and cost, etc., if they've now discovered there are different ways of doing it. I just think we're at the very beginning of some fascinating times, but we won't know, and maybe it'll be 2030 or something before we can look back on this. I just think there's a lot of change coming.
Brilliant. Well, that's a good place to finish. Faiz, did you have anything further to say? I'll maybe take that as a no. Faisal? Faisal, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I think there's a lot of talk about how we do a virtual booth at the moment, which is really sad. But I think it's time to look, as you said, what's the value exchange? And now you're quite an advocate of that. And let's start from there, and then that would work out what we can do in the near future as well.
Cool. Okay. Well, look, Peter, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for inviting me, guys. Thanks.
And if people want to find you, then that's, I think, relatively easy, isn't it, to find you in the network and all the stuff that you do.
Yeah, medcomsnetworking.com, or follow hashtag medcoms. It's you get to me pretty quickly. Yeah.
And Peter, you have networking day coming up soon.
Medcoms. Just as we're speaking, yeah, a very busy week for me in a couple of weeks' time. Medcoms, the celebration of a day in the life of medcoms. It's our 9th medcoms day on June 10th. If you follow hashtag medcoms, there's going to be a lot of activity, a lot of noise, and I think a lot, you know, it's the community coming together a bit. I think it's a great expression of the fact there's a global community out there, and there'll be some fun along the way. And yeah, no, it's big and it's good and it's noisy, hopefully.
Perfect. Excellent. Cool. Thank you very much. Well, then it's goodbye from me. also, bye. Thanks a lot.
And goodbye from him.
thanks for listening, and you'll be listening to us again soon.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Bye.